Around the globe, people are putting their lives on the line to protect the environment. And the Goldman Environmental Prize honors an activist from each of the 6 inhabited continents. Some recipients have paid the ultimate price for their work. 2015 winner Berta Cáceres of Honduras and Mexico's Isidro Baldenegro López, who won in 2005, were both murdered last year. The winners this year are no less courageous. Prafula Samaratara of India, Rodrigue Katembe, a park ranger from Congo, and Rodrigo Tote, a native Quechi from Guatemala, all halted mines in their tracks, while Slovenian farmer Uroš Masaril derailed plans for a toxic waste incinerator, all in the face of ferocious opposition. In a few minutes, we'll hear from 83-year-old Wendy Bowman, who battled coal strip mining in Australia. But first, we turn to 32-year-old Mark López, who fought an Exide lead smelter in East Los Angeles. Mark, welcome to Living on Earth.
Thank you, and thank you for having me.
So tell me, who in your community alerted you to the Exide Corporation battery acid recycling plant pollution, and when did you decide to do something about this?
Yeah, you know, it was actually my grandma that alerted me. After I graduated from UC Santa Cruz, I went to visit her and my grandpa, and she actually handed me a public notice about Exide and was like, hey, you know Exide's still there, right? And she was asking me if I know it's still there because her and my mother actually toured the Exide site in the 90s. And, you know, of course, Exide was telling them, oh, there's nothing to worry about, you know, just nothing to worry about. And so my grandma said, well, if there's nothing to worry about, then why did the Cal EPA staff put on all this protective gear? And why'd they make me put on all this protective gear if there's nothing to worry about? And then more importantly, why aren't any of the workers putting on protective gear? I think that was a signal that if the company is putting their own workers at risk, then they have no problem compromising the health of our communities. And so when I came back from Santa Cruz, she handed me that notice and said, you know, get on it.
So Mark, tell me, what's the scale of lead contamination, that problem in LA?
Yeah, so Exide spewed about 7 million pounds of lead into the air. And we're talking about over 100,000 people impacted in East LA and Southeast LA. And so there's absolutely no level of lead that is safe in our bodies, especially in children. And so it affects brain development, which impacts educational attainment, which of course impacts the future of our communities. But it also affects impulse control. And so exposure to lead in communities has been correlated with rates of violence and crime in communities. And so these are things that our communities have been plagued with. And so we have to ask the question, so what role has Exide played in this?
Now, what did you and your community find especially challenging in dealing with that type of contamination there?
One of the hardest parts was actually dealing with the state. The state allowed Exide to operate without a permit for years. And so they're a responsible party in this disaster, right? And so every step of the way, they've stalled. They've told us that things couldn't happen or what we wanted was not possible. They told us the problem's not that big. It's just these 2 homes we need to clean. And we had to push them to 40 homes and 80 homes and 209 homes. And so now we're over 10,000 homes that the state is acknowledging are impacted by Exide. And that's not even the half of it. They're only looking at 1.7 miles radius around the Exide site. But State Department of Health data was released that showed that up to 4.5 mile radius around the site, there's higher levels of lead in children's blood in the rest of LA County.
Now, California is famous for, or I guess some would say infamous, for being environmentally proactive, but it sounds like your experience is the opposite, that you've had to drag the California government kicking and screaming to deal with the lead smelter problem in East LA. Why do you think that is?
Yeah, you know, I think the state likes to posture itself as somehow different from the rest of the country. And, you know, of course, with Trump in office now as leading the resistance to the Trump agenda. But the reality is when you think about environmental racism, it exists in East LA and it exists in all parts of LA. It exists in San Diego and Coachella Valley. It exists on the Central Coast and the Central Valley in the Bay Area. Environmental racism exists.
Tell me about the Lead Acid Battery Recycling Act of last year, 2016, and the income and fees that it's expected to produce.
Yes, I think you're referring to Assemblywoman Cristina Garcia's bill, AB 2153, that is a battery fee bill. And so this fee that's being charged for batteries that actually just started this month will be collected and will create a revenue stream that's estimated at $30 to $40 million a year to help clean up this Exide issue and also 14 other sites across the state of California where they're dealing with lead smelter issues. And they call these ghost smelters because the company no longer exists. So there is no responsible party. And so this bill is really helping to kind of relieve these issues in communities that where there's no other solution in sight.
So when you came back from college and worked to close that lead battery smelter, that recycling plant, it sounds like that was just the beginning.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting, right? Because it took something like 2 decades to kind of shut down the facility. And I think something that's important to note is, I'm third generation in my family fighting against Exide, but all of the work our community has put in has made it so that my babies aren't the fourth generation having to fight against Exide, right? And that's really significant.
How do you think the rest of America is responding to the lead contamination crisis?
I'm really hoping that this Exide issue and the Goldman Award is helping to raise the visibility around lead as a crisis that's facing the country. This doesn't happen with, you know, a million people marching in D.C. or even a million people marching in downtown L.A. It starts with neighbors talking to each other from saying, hey, this is kind of messed up, right? Oh, you agree too? Oh, yeah, all right, then let's talk to our other neighbor. It's kind of messed up, right? Okay, you agree? Okay, you got a couple neighbors on that block, then you can advance on the next block. And you got that block, and you got a neighborhood, and you got that neighborhood, and you can get a couple neighborhoods, and you start a movement, right? I think our fundamental questions that we try to answer are, what is it? How does it affect us? And what can we do about it? And if you got answers to those questions, then you can start a movement in any community.
Mark Lopez is one of the 2017 Goldman Environmental Prize recipients. Congratulations again, Mark.
Yeah, thank you, Steve. It's a pleasure talking to you.
Joining us now is Wendy Bowman of Australia. Coal mining in Australia goes back 150 years or so, but when strip mining began near her farm in New South Wales, environmental and health concerns turned Wendy Bowman into an activist.
It was all underground mining, very small in the early days. There didn't appear to be any big problems for a good 150 years. Then all of a sudden, in about the early to mid-1980s, open cut mining started, and the government was putting leases on all over the place, and people were getting shocked that their country was in a lease area. And that was the start of all the problems, because the mining people were very abusive and argumentative, and they told you exactly what we had to do. And so we decided that it was our land and we would tell them what they could do.
So when and why did you found MineWatch NSW? I guess that stands for New South Wales. What's the mission?
Well, what we did with MineWatch in the beginning, because nobody knew their rights or whatever, we started this group and we found a lawyer and a valuer who both knew the New South Wales Coal Mining Act very well. So they were able to come to our meetings, explain to everybody what their rights were. And so we helped people doing all this so that, I mean, there were a lot of small farmers that just did not understand these great big environmental impact statements that the mine would dump at their house and say, read that. And it was about 3 encyclopedias big. And so many of them used to ring me up and say, my God, I can't read all this. And I would say to them, well, just look at the chapters. You read the chapters that are worrying you, such as noise, dust, water, whatever. And that was basically what MineWatch did to help people.
So what kinds of contamination has resulted from the mining?
Well, the water. That is one of the big problems. And we've only very recently discovered that the contamination is a lot worse than we thought. Now, we've only just discovered that about 40, 50 kilometres or miles away from Newcastle, the silt in the bottom of the Hunter River is jet black. Now, we have not had time to go and test it yet, but we believe that that is the result of the water slowing down and everything being left. And that is the latest big worry. But prior to that, all our creeks and the rivers, the water was so clean and beautiful. You could see all the rocks in the bottom of the water. You could see the fish, the turtles. And we had platypus in all the rivers. There's none left.
The platypus is gone, huh?
Anywhere where there's been mining, mine water being allowed to go down the river or the creek, there's no more platypus.
What kind of pollution-related health impacts are you seeing among people who are near these mining operations?
For years, the blasting at the mines was so big that we had this orange cloud so thick you could hardly see your own back gate. And that covered all your roof. It covered everything. And we found when we owned the farm next door to this open cut mine that all that dust landed on the crops that the dairy cows had to eat. They'd walk in after a blast and walk back out again. They would not eat it. And so this was the big problem, was the dust. Well, nowadays, we've worked with the New South Wales Minerals Council. The blasts have gone right down to what they used to be. They're not allowed to blast if there's a wind blowing, et cetera, et cetera. They have to be very careful. Then we started in Singleton, we started the Singleton Shire Healthy Environment Group because we heard that so many people had respiratory problems like asthma and that sort of thing. And when you see lots of these little children coughing and spluttering, I know a few young teenagers that are so bad with their asthma that they have oxygen at home, but sometimes that isn't enough. So the mother's got to race them. It takes a half an hour to drive into town to the hospital where they've got the bigger oxygen things that they can stay there overnight.
Talk to me about how you'll continue to oppose the negative environmental and health impacts of coal mining in Australia. What's next?
Well, we haven't got very far with the health problems just recently. The government just doesn't seem to want to know anything about it. For years now, we have been asking, every time there's a new mine or an extension to a mine, we have said there must be a health assessment added to the environmental impact statement. And the government will not do it. And we've been asking this, I'd say, for at least 15 or 16 years. They won't do it. So I think the more people like us say something, they're going to have to start thinking about it.
Wendy Bowman is a Goldman Prize recipient and founder of MineWatch New South Wales. Thanks so much for taking the time with us today, and congratulations.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure speaking to you.